with a view towards what I hope will be a significant emphasis of the coming year for all of us here at Five Points. Two significant foundations for us to consider. One being our great opportunity to proclaim Christ here in this culture as a missionary outpost in our own culture. We'll talk more about that in the coming months. And throughout the world, looking for all the opportunities we might find as God in His providence brings them to us to proclaim Christ. And then also a commitment to developing a true communion of saints here that transcends Sundays where we gather together encouraging each other while it's today. And while we might encourage each other Godward not only in our fellowship but in our evangelism. As many of you know, an opportunity has come to us here to help reach the country of Russia. And it's fascinating, as Les Menon and I sat this last week with Bob Provost from the Slavic Gospel Association and Bob Whitney, who is heading up this project, to listen again to the unfolding drama of redemption in Russia and how in God's providence that a church like ours would be included in this vision and how magnificent it is to us as we consider it. As many of you have heard, we've been invited to help begin a network of Bible institutes in Russia for the purpose of training church planters. It's very specific, very targeted, and is aimed at training church planters to go to places that have no churches. And I'll say more about that in a minute. It is a genuine opportunity to participate in a modern Reformation. And that has all of us who have heard about it and are learning about it and participating in it pretty much on the edge of our seats to consider it. Let me give you a brief historical background for it and then some statistical information. Start to lay out what it means for us here and over there over the next years. And then I have a videotape to show you. It takes about 20 minutes, which is something of a documentary about the church that got started in Kirovo-Chepetsk, where all of this will be launching from. In about 900 AD, the Tsar, who was in power in Russia at the time, sent out emissaries throughout the entire world looking for a religion for his country. It was his intention to find the finest religion and then make it the religion of his country, and he would lead that. The emissaries all came back. They presented their ideas about which religions they thought were best for Russia. And the one that won out the day was what we now know as Eastern Orthodoxy. And he immediately baptized the entire country of Russia in one fell swoop as we are now Eastern Orthodox. And they embraced it as a national religion. All other religions were banned. All other teachings were excised from the country. And as you can imagine, a country that in our vernacular spans 11 time zones, and you could fit the United States inside of Russia five times, and at that time held second only to China, the world's greatest population. You can imagine this is no small stir. But the country is immediately baptized into Eastern Orthodoxy. About the same time, you have four geographic bishops fighting for power to become the main bishop of the church in the world. And remember, until this time, we don't have denominations as we know them. There's just the church. But around this time, there's all sorts of maneuverings geopolitically, and there was a fight to see who would be top pope, if I can put it in kind of slang for us. There was the Bishop of Constantinople and the Bishop of Rome. They were the two most powerful. And the Bishop of Rome wins out. And so you have a bifurcation now in the known church. There is the Roman church, which is predominant. And then you have Eastern Orthodoxy, which is subservient and smaller in scope. But at the same time, all of Russia now is baptized into Eastern Orthodoxy. The significant difference between Romanism and Eastern Orthodoxy is that Orthodoxy teaches as its primary doctrine theosis. That is, that through these means of grace, all these different rituals that you would follow, You actually become like God. You become God. So it's different from Romanism, but at the same time, it claims to be the closest to the original first century church. If you go to a true Eastern Orthodox church today, even in our area, they will tell you we are the closest to being the true church in the world. We trace our roots closest to the beginning. They have a set of five volumes called the Philokia, which articulates all of the early church fathers that they cite. But interesting, in all five volumes, there's not one mention of forensic justification. Not one word of explanation that we are justified by grace alone, through faith alone, because of the imputed righteousness of Christ alone. Not even a mention of it. And so you have an entire system claiming to be the closest to the original, and yet not one word of the gospel in it. Now, just take Russia now, locking down in the 900s under the Tsar's rule, and then locking down further culturally into Eastern Orthodoxy and excising everything else. And you have some of the historical makings for what happened in the early 1900s. The Tsars are thrown out of power. No Tsar lasted more than 60 years. And no government has lasted more than 60 years in Russia. In the 1920s, there's the Bolshevik Revolution. Communism is sweeping through the country. And just as sweeping as the Tsar baptizing the country into Eastern Orthodoxy, the communists baptized it into atheism, removing every piece of literature that would mention God, removing even the word from the common language, and then literally making criminal the pursuit of God in any way that was not legislated by the government. At the same time, you have emerging out of this a little enclave of Protestants, and they were regulated by the communists under the name of the Evangelical Baptist Union. Now, that doesn't mean they're all Baptists. It just means if you're not Eastern Orthodox, you fall under the Baptist Union. For the entirety of the communistic rule, there was horrendous kinds of persecutions. Not just Christians, but more Eastern Orthodox priests lost their lives than the number of pastors that were imprisoned or lost their lives. So it was categoric kinds of suffering and persecution on anything religious in the country. Stalin being the most vicious, shipping most of the clergy out the Trans-Siberian Railway to a city called Magadan, which is on the far eastern coast on the Pacific Ocean, and it was a one-way train trip. And that's where all of the prison camps were, out in the Far East and in Siberia. So you have an excising of anything that is religious, great persecution coming to the church, and this horrendous matrix of Eastern Orthodoxy is kind of the bedrock for anything Christian. So when you go there, and you even go to what are now the Christian churches, they have so deeply been influenced by Eastern Orthodoxy that they carry a lot of they carry a lot of the mysticisms, of the cultural nuances, and a lot of the strange kinds of mystical teachings that are in the Eastern Orthodoxy. Predominant in the Baptist Union is traditional Arminianism. It is the doctrine of the Baptist Union. When you go to the preacher teach, you are told, do not preach anything that would communicate the eternal security of the saints. For this is not taught in the Protestant churches. It is taught that you indeed can lose your salvation, because indeed you are the one in a cooperative effort that gains your salvation. It is a hyper-legalistic society. Legalism that is so rampant and so deep and so powerful that genuine Christianity, while it exists, exists primarily in doctrinal confusion and mysticism, and layer after layer of legalisms. So much so that men over 60 do not exist in the church in Russia, because they are all killed in the Second World War. The predominant population of the church in Russia are women over 60, the babushkas, who literally run the show. And then you have very few young people, very few younger adults and children who have then come to Christ and then been assimilated into the church. And the style of government in the church is much like you would expect in any culture. Here in the United States, what is the predominant way that we govern our churches? What's the predominant church polity? Democratic or congregational rule, because of our culture has so deeply influenced us. Well, what would you expect in the churches in Russia? Dictatorships, and that's exactly what it is. A pastor will be over a region, and his word is law, and those pastors in their churches are very powerful that way. Now, there are exceptions to this, but the exceptions are few and far between, and when I share some statistical data, the exceptions are even more exceptional because of the few number of churches that actually exist. So here is this country that has been locked away in communism. It is now in abject poverty. Less than 5% of the population has any kinds of hopeful economic means, and most of those are mafia or bankers or government. So 95% of the country now is living in abject poverty and without any hope of that changing. There is no market economy there. You go to Moscow, and that is an oxymoron in the country. When you go to Moscow and there's a McDonald's and a TGI Fridays and there are restaurants on the Red Square, but you go anywhere else in the country and the people are living literally day to day in abject poverty without any speculation of any change in that. So a young person growing up in America, you grow up and you graduate from high school and you think, well, I'll go to college, I'll get a job, I got a future. A kid goes to the Russian system and there's nothing for him. There are no jobs. There is really no great hope for him. So you have that cultural darkness now weighing over the top of everything. Then when the wall came down in 89, Americans flooded Russia with American Christianity. And it took about 3 years before the Russian pastors were begging the Americans, get out of here with this. Because when the American Christians came over, what do you think the Russians equated what they were preaching with? They immediately equated it with, we will be better off financially if we follow these people, because look at Americans. And by and large, the health wealth cult in America was just wholesale shipped to Russia. So much so that the Russians want nothing to do with American Christianity except for a few trusted souls that they have found. Namely, the Slavic Gospel Association, Send International, and then there's a few others who have made their way into the country and have shown that they are there to work with the nationals, to be committed to the churches, and they're not there to import some American idea and just proselytize the people. The country could not be in a more difficult and tragic condition, but at the same time, as Malcolm Muggeridge would say, the darker it gets, the brighter the light shines. So let me just share what is factual from the missiologists who have been there, and it will help us understand it. There is one Protestant church that we could even begin to describe as Bible believers for every 100,000 people. But then, there are only 7 members for each one of those churches. So out of every 100,000 people, there are 7 who would be considered Christians. 90% of Russia has yet to be reached with its own indigenous church. And when I say church, we're talking about something that claims to be Bible-believing and even comes close to preaching the text. And that's another sad story. The Russian translation is pathetic. I will never forget standing in Khabarovsk in a classroom with 25 young men training to go out and plant churches in Siberia, no less, and getting to a particular text where I was waxing eloquent on the importance of this text in the pastoral epistles, and the translator just stopped translating on me. I looked and I said, what's the problem? She says, well, they don't have that in their Bibles. That section's missing. They're still working with the Eastern Orthodox translation, And it is dramatically edited from what you and I have. And the Russian language is very difficult because of its tense, the way the tenses are used in Russian language. So right now, Wycliffe and others are working on a better translation for the Russians, because even the Bible they have is so pathetic. 100,000 communities are still without a church. There are 1,500 churches and groups that span over 11 time zones. We have 1,500 churches probably in Oakland County. There are 537 churches that have been planted since 1989. 25,000 church planters could reach Russia in 10 years. And it would take about 100 strategic Bible institutes training 25 of these guys at a time, because that's all you can do. It's all the facilities will hold, 25 guys at a time. For 1 year, they're trained in the basics of going out and planting a church. They're not going to be pastors. They are doing what Paul would do. Go to a town, plant a church, go to the next town. It's going to take 25,000 of these guys to reach the country. So that's the vision behind planting these strategic Bible institutes. And candidly, listening to Bob Provost and Bob Whitney, and if you've never heard of or know Bob Provost, he is one of the church statements and missions today. He was for a long time the provost for John MacArthur at the Master's College, then became an executive director for Send International, and then when the wall came down, went with Slavic Gospel Mission to articulate clearly this vision for the Eastern Bloc. He has a son in Albania who's been there since the wall came down, another son who will go back, lives in Toronto now, ministering to the Russians, the Albanians there. Bob Provost may be as good an authority on the Eastern Bloc as there is alive today. Made over 110 trips himself into the country and is deeply passionate and deeply knowledgeable about this, and one of the only people I would even trust to articulate what's true about what's going on in the Union, former Soviet Union. There are very few who are committed to training these kinds of guys. It's not very glamorous. You go to places that our third world conditions, truly. You have to find guys who will go and teach through a translator for a couple weeks and try to train these guys. It's not a seminary. There's only 5 seminaries in all of Russia, 5 genuinely Orthodox seminaries, and Slavic Gospel, along with Send, has planted all of those. That's where Rick is. Rick Perhise at Kiev is one of the seminaries. Those places are there to train the pastors. You know how long that takes, 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get those guys trained. But these guys who are being selected out by the churches, they're selected out by the pastors and deacons, that's a very serious thing in the Russian church. It was my privilege to preach in Komsomolsk at the ordination of deacons. These 10 men knelt on the platform with their wives standing behind them, weeping over the gravity of what they were giving themselves to. I had never been in a more solemn occasion than the ordination of these deacons, taking it so incredibly seriously of what their task would be and their call to it. So out of these churches, they are very carefully selecting out young men who would then be sent by the church, paid for by the church. You remember, these people have no money. And they're paying for these guys to go now and be trained for a year, and then they're launched out to a place that has no church of any kind to plant a church. And when I say a place, don't think of a town like 15,000. Think of a town of 1 million or 250,000 planted all over Russia, not the least of which is Siberia and Ukhorets and the Far East. And literally the uttermost part of the world, northern Russia, where the only thing up there are reindeer. And no churches. But these guys are willing to go. And they're nationals, so they speak the language, they know the culture, and the Bible Institute is an intensified year-long training session to give them the tools they need to go out and plant these churches. That's what these strategic Bible institutes are all about. Now, how do we get involved with it? Well, I get a phone call from Bobby Johnson, who's a pastor at Cornerstone Baptist Church. He and I graduated from undergrad together. He said, "Dan, you're one of the few guys I even know of in the area who's reformational." I said, "Well, thanks. You're about the only other guy I know who's reformational around here." He said, "Here's what's happening. There's a group of pastors in the Baptist Union who want reformational truth. They want to pull out from their Arminian backgrounds, and they want us to train church planters. Are you interested?" Well, that took about a second. Having taught there and having preached in the churches and knowing the difficulty of bringing the full orb doctrine of the gospel to the church. There's a group of guys who want to start Bible institutes to train church planters that all the churches that they'll go out and plant will be doctrinally sound from the ground up. That sounds a little bit Martin Luther-esque, doesn't it? So that took about 5 minutes to say, "Yeah, what do we got to do?" He said, "Well, there's a small group of pastors that Bob Provost has talked to and asked us if we'd at least commit to starting one and send teachers and finance to help get this thing launched." I said, "Well, that's just a no-brainer." So we committed to help. Now, the original city was Krasnodar, which is down on the north, on the Black Sea in Kazakhstan, where there's a deep Islamic movement. And there is a pastor there overseeing a group of churches that was going to allow this to happen. The Baptist Union got wind of that. They sent their head honcho there, and they put the clamps on it immediately. And it will take another year, because that man will leave within a year, and then this other pastor will be back in the position to bring the school there. So it can't go to Krasnodar. Well, in the meantime, in God's providence, 600 miles north, where it's colder, in Kirovo-Chepetsk, there is a great awakening occurring, and a pastor there says, "I'll take it. Whatever it takes, I'll take the Bible Institute, and I'll keep the union officials out of here, and we will train 25 guys. So if I can show you a little map, I skipped all the CE classes in seminary, so I'm not too good at this. So I'll just do my best with it. Okay. Let's see. Go that way to go that way. There's our little map. Now, down here is where Krasnodar would be. And up here is where Rick is in Kiev. This is Kirovo-Chepetsk. That's an area of 2 million people in that city. 2 million people. And one church, the Grace Church of Kirovo-Chepetsk. And that's where one of the first strategic Bible institutes is going to go. And then from there, they will send out 25 guys into that region to go plant churches in cities that have no church. And then hopefully next year, there's a school in Krasnodar, and 25 guys will go to that region. And if more churches would get involved, then the more strategic Bible institutes that can go on. And then from that region, 25 guys go out to that greater area. So at least geographically, you can see where it's at. Now, Moscow and West is fairly well reached. But everything from Moscow East and Moscow South and Moscow North, very little has been reached as far as planting a church there. I want to show you a video of the pastor who started this church in Kirovo-Chepetsk. He started it 10 years ago. In 10 years, a church of 450 people, they haven't always been 450 people, they're 450 now. In 10 years, it's 450 people, and they have already planted 35 churches all by themselves. Now, that sounds like a church I'd like to go to. Without any help from anybody. Well, we got to plant some churches out there. So this pastor launched it out, and it is no small story about who this man is and what this church is and what it's all about. This takes 23 minutes. That'll take us up to about 7 o'clock-ish, 7:05. And then I've just got a couple comments, and then we'll be done. But I wanted you to at least meet the church that we potentially could be involved with as a sister church and help plant this institute. Michael, are you a better CE guy than I am? All right. How prayer? And when someone becomes a Christian, They always refer to it in terms of their repenters, not primarily their believers, after their repenters. And magnificent work. Now, this church in Kirovo-Chepetsk is by far the exception of what's in Russia. But God has raised up this little platoon there and opened a door for those to come and establish a Bible Institute in this church for a year with no restrictions on what is taught. Actually, a call to come and teach the full-orbed gospel of God to these students so they can go plant churches. Bob Johnson will be going in the first 2 weeks of February to teach the book of Romans. And then I've been assigned to go to February 11 through 22 to teach soteriology, or the doctrine of salvation. So Bob's going to go and mess them entirely up, and I have to go clean up the mess in February. So between those 4 weeks, there's a New Testament, Old Testament survey courses that are taught. There is classes in Greek Orthodoxy, so they understand Orthodoxy better. There's a hermeneutics and homiletics class that's taught. But the guts of it are these 4 weeks teaching Romans and teaching soteriology, which is the only part of theology proper that these church plans will get in that year. They'll be handed a little library, about 3 or 4 books in the Russian language, most of which are commentaries, much of which are being produced by MacArthur's church in California. And then a Bible, and then launched out. Because it's not in Krasnodar, and because we could not get Rick Perhai out of Kiev to come and teach the first few weeks, there are several other problems. We're not able to get Lance out of France, and a couple of other teaching issues that went on. So the leadership group has totally revamped the year, and if we can, we might be able to fill one more teaching spot out of our church. But then for fall of 2002 in Krasnodar, we would hope that we could, out of our own church, send 4 or 5 teachers, actually. So what we will need, not only this coming school year, but then the following, are teachers, those who are capable of teaching a particular academic subject like New Testament survey, general epistles, Pauline epistles, etc., homiletics, hermeneutics, those kinds of things, and travel partners. It is not wise to travel to this part of Russia alone, and so we will all need travel partners, at least one other person, possibly 2 other people, to travel with the teacher. There's a flight from Detroit to New York to Moscow, and then a 14-hour train ride from Moscow on the Trans-Siberian Railway to Kirovo-Chepetsk or to Krasnodar. Krasnodar is a little more difficult because of the Islamic influence, but these are not places you travel alone, that's for sure. So I put that out. We will need prayer teams, those who pray specifically for the work, pray while it's going on, and then post-fact. And then obviously we want to be, we'll be talking both at missionary committee level and board level about how we can help financially as well. We'll come back to you with how we might participate. $300 a month supports a church planter for everything he needs. Pays for his existence and for all the ministry costs that he will do. Can you imagine that? That's just mind-boggling how far the dollar goes in Russia to plant churches. So that's a little bit of glimpse of what's going on. There is a sister work that's going to be going on in October. We're shipping off Mike Critch and Jim Kleindl to Slovakia. That's another part of the Eastern Bloc where SGA is working and international needs. These guys are going with international needs, and they're going to help do construction work on a retreat and academic center in Slovakia that will be used by all the regional churches there. And Jim and Mike are going almost as a pilot to what these short terms in the Eastern Bloc would be like, and they're going to take copious notes on what this is like and come back and help us as we establish short terms into the Eastern Bloc as well. So you want to be in much prayer for Mike and Jim as they prepare for that. And we'll be coming to you as a church to help raise the monies needed to send them to get them over to Slovakia for a 2-week period in October. So this is just little glimpses of what we are aiming ourselves at as a church here at Five Points, to be missional. This is why we exist. We exist for no other purpose but to be missional as a missionary outpost in Oakland County, which we believe we exist in a true missionary outpost existence. If missiologists did a study of Oakland County, they'd say, send missionaries there. And then to be missional in places that have no gospel witness. That is the highest priority in our minds right now. That where there are no churches planted, we're going to do everything we can to find out who they are in God's providence as they come to us and help plant them there. And do everything we can to launch that effort, especially helping the nationals to accomplish this work. So these are little snapshots of what's burgeoning now, what God is bringing to us, and that we're trying to respond to, and we'll pray that we're good stewards of it and that we're able to meet that as well as we possibly can. Now, if a church of 450 in Kirovo-Chepetz can plant 35 churches, I think a church of 500 in Oakland County can start lining up and say, okay, what churches are we going to plant here and around the world? And then get at it, okay? And you all know that God in His providence is giving us what we need to build our own new facilities here. We haven't talked about it in any official kinds of formats at all, but I think we need to pray seriously and consider seriously that we as a church would respond financially, giving. If we are building a new building, we'd all be giving to it. Then why would we not as sacrificially, if not more so, and as passionately give to mission and ministry? We are being afforded an extraordinary opportunity to participate in the advance of the gospel in ways that I just don't know very many churches are getting this kind of opportunity. And we must pray that God would permit us to go on and not leave off and not be poor stewards of these windows that are open to us. So I'd ask you to be much prayer for all these things that are going on around the world. Delighted to have Rhonda and her boys back, her men back tonight. And you'll be with here in the air, at least in the States, for about a year before you're going back to Papua New Guinea, and maybe I get to come when you go back. And then her oldest son is heading off to Baptist Bible College in Clark Summit in the fall, and the two younger guys are heading back to Papua with Mom in a year. So hopefully we get to see a lot more of Rhonda as you come back this way and tell us everything that's going on in Papua, which is, everybody remember John Patton? Biography of John Patton? These are the great-grandchildren missionaries of John Patton who went to the New Hebrides back in the 1850s. All right. Any quick questions at all before we have to leave off? Any at all that you're just dying to ask before we get out of here? Craig?
How long before that big Russian translation?
At least a year. At least a year. It's slow going, and there's just to be candid, there's just not a lot of money being thrown at the project. Don't ask me why. You'd think that that size country and that kind of interest, it's as if the Eastern Bloc, the Bloc came down in 89 to about 92, there was this passionate zeal to go reach Russia, and then it's as if the United States lost interest. And right now, it's just a slow go, the number of workers that are at it, and just a slow go. The worst thing, besides the Bible not being translated, virtually no significant tools have been translated. Strong's or Young's Concordance, just a concordance, or a commentary, let alone the kinds of books that are available to me at any moment. These guys have no tools, and I think that's true throughout the world, apart from here in the States and in the West, that tools are not being translated for these guys, which, that's just mind-boggling to me. I don't know what I'd do without my tools. And most of these guys throughout the world are operating with a failed translation and virtually no tools. And I think that's true not only, I know it's true not only in Russia, but throughout the world for the most part. And Charles Cheng and Jack Sui, when I talk to them about China, it's exactly the same in China. They have a fairly good translation in Chinese, but the tools available to these guys are nothing. And then the number of Bibles is just non-existent. The greatest thing about going to the Russian church, if I could segue, is when the people come to church, they carry their Bible and their hymnal. And they know their hymnal as well as they know their Bible. And it's a treat to sing in a Russian church. Because even though they carry their hymnal, they don't need their hymnal. And to hear the Russian church sing. If you go, if you're able to go, and you're in a Russian church, there are three sermons in a Russian service. It takes 2.5 hours for the whole service. You think we had it bad. Yeah. You go into a room with all the brats, all the brothers, all the deacons and the pastor. And that's when you find out who preaches. He goes, and you, and you, and you. And that's when you find out. Very little exegetical preaching like we're used to, that does not take place in the Russian church. It takes place when the Americans show up. And they've got notes, and then the Russians look down on you because you got notes, because they're used to, hey, the Spirit leads. And you can hear some really bizarre stuff in Russian sermons, let me tell you, having heard some bizarre things myself. So it's a place that just needs desperate help. Unlike very, very many industrialized nations of the world. It's a fascinating story. And place that's open, unlike China. Anything else real quick? Yes, back here. Elijah. Pardon me? Well, there's a lot now, but the primary ones are Judaism, Eastern Orthodoxy, Roman Catholicism, and then all kinds of Protestants. And then through this lower sections, you have Islam. And from the eastern sections, you have Hindu. So everything is coming in. When the wall came down, everything came in. So there's all kinds of religions flying around. In a fascinating, fascinating place. All right, anything else? Yes, sir.
Are people killing the believers anymore?
No, that doesn't go on very much. There's still some problems in the far east part of Russia where some pastors still are bothered, but no, the persecution and killing and imprisonment is pretty much over. But government's not real cooperative for anything else, but that's pretty much over. Good question. Yes, Kevin.
You were there for training, but you didn't stay, or were you there for training, or were you going
to? I taught in 1996. I was supposed to go for a 2-week track in the Far East Bible Institute, and got stuck there. How long was I there for? I got stuck because that was back when the government was being really sticky, and the other teacher couldn't get in because they denied his visa, so they were stuck with no teacher. So, okay, Dan, you're teaching this now. So. I stayed an extra 2 weeks and taught the other 2 weeks. So.
Just to train, you didn't plan to stay there.
Didn't plan to stay, no, but I emailed home and said, told Lynette to pack the kids and just come, because facetiously. It's different. And it's amazing to stand in front of a group of guys studying to be church planters and have them weep while you're teaching, because they have never heard it. It's unlike any experience I've ever had. Because here, we're all basically familiar with it. But to stand in front of a group of guys and explain grace alone and have them fall on their faces in worship. Maybe that's the way it should be in our seminaries and colleges in the United States. These guys just could not believe the truth they were hearing. And, so there, you teach for an hour, then you have a 10-minute break, but there were no breaks because it's all Q&A. And then you have to teach for an hour, and it's supposed to be a 10-minute break, but you keep talking. Then you have lunch, and you keep talking. It's all afternoon. You teach 3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon. And then from the end of the class in the afternoon until 2 in the morning, you just sit and answer questions. And that goes on for 2 weeks. And I haven't talked to anybody who's taught who hasn't had the same experience. Just this starvation to hear it for the first time. Have the Word of God open to him. When you read Luther's biography, you have some sense of what Luther went through when he finally read Romans 3 and got it. And he just couldn't put it down. And you get some glimpses of that with these guys. They've just never heard it. And I take it for granted that I know these things, and they become more academic. And for these guys, it's life. It's just life. Now you all want to go, don't you? No, pack you up, put you on a plane, we'll all go. You'll need shopkas, and Krasnodar was on the Black Sea in a very balmy area. This is in Siberia. So February, why do I get the mission trips? And you know, Rhonda invites me to come to Papua New Guinea, and I have to bail on that. I want a re-invitation. I'm going to the South Seas at some point. I get Siberia in February. That's how smart I am, you know. And the only pastor's conference I go to is in Minneapolis in February. I mean, what? Are you dumb, Cummings? You know, get a clue here. Hey, we got to get out of here. It's pushing the hour. Thanks for coming.